Is the CIA a dysfunctional criminal organization run by bullies who beat up whistleblowers, spy on Americans, help assassinate American presidents and other world leaders, and then lie about it? Well, when you read the book called Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok, here it is, you'll likely reach that very same conclusion that I have. The book is written by a former CIA agent turned whistleblower, Pedro Israel Horta. Once he saw how broken the CIA was, he tried to fix it. He tried to fix it internally, go to his supervisors, warn them about it. Mike Pompeo, instead of listening to him, of course, they fired him, tried to ruin his life. Sound familiar? Of course, like the FBI whistleblowers whose lives have been ruined after they exposed the corruption at the FBI, this sounds all too familiar. What about those whistleblower protection laws that are supposed to protect people like Pedro? We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about JFK. We're going to talk about so much more on today's show. Pedro Israel Horta is that former CIA agent, and he joins us now. Pedro, thank you for your bravery, and thank you for speaking out. Thank you for your book, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Well, the honor is all mine. We talk about these whistleblowers, but we can get in. I want to get into your story here and what you went through with Mike Pompeo, what you went through at the CIA, bringing all of the sort of dysfunctionality to their attention and trying to fix it internally. I mean, you weren't running to the media, you weren't running to the New York Times, you weren't running to publications or Fox News or other places to talk about the dysfunction and the problems. You tried to do the right thing, it seems, from what I understand, and you were thrown out. So when we talk about these whistleblower protection laws that are in place to protect people like you, do they work?
There are whistleblower laws in place for the intelligence community. Presidential Policy Directive 19, which is the equivalent of an executive order, which is the equivalent of United States statute code law. They're backed up by a legislative act, federal law, that codifies such protections. So the technicality is you've got laws in the book. The issue becomes in enforcement, the way these laws are enforced. And the weak link are the inspector generals. The inspector generals basically can do as they please, interpret these laws as they please. And I had the ability to get an insider's perspective of the feckless inspector generals as an inspector general working on inspections. I served a tour of almost 20 months for the Office of Inspector General for the Intelligence Community, and I worked on an evaluation that evaluates the implementation of these whistleblower laws. And what we found, it came out in a news article by the Daily Beast, where the evaluation we worked on was shut down. That's a long story. But the bottom line is that there is a total, complete failure of the inspector generals to implement the actual standards, policies, and procedures afforded to these whistleblowers. And if you were to go further back to find out why this is happening, it's primarily because the law is significantly weak and deficient. So it falls on Congress. Congress has failed to enact robust whistleblower protections. And they have also failed to install some form of mechanisms of oversight to see to it that the intelligence community would protect a whistleblower from reprisal. And if any comes forward alleging reprisal, that their reprisal will be fully investigated according to the law. And consequently, at the end of the day, when you really look at all the different cases out there, there's really not a single intelligence community whistleblower who used the internal processes, who basically came out unscathed or had any remedy. Potentially one
none?
Case. None at all, because the one public case out there, there is one public case, and that's Andrew Bakage, who blew the whistle internally using the policies and procedures about serious wrongdoing within the CIA Office of Inspector General. And his IG and Deputy IG, David Buckley and Christopher Sharpley, would ultimately be implicated as having taken reprisals against them. And there's a reason why this happened. When I was serving at the ICIG, at the very beginning, we had Charles McCullough and we had Daniel P. Meyer in charge of the whistleblower program. Those two were staunch, ardent supporters of whistleblowers, and protections to a degree may have made some progress under them, but they were basically forced out. The long story on Charles McCullough, but the Hillary Clinton emails caused him to take a big hit with Congress, with DNI Clapper, and basically Charles McCullough basically checked out and retired and left. And it got left with interim leaders who were trying to cook the books, trying to force us, the investigators and the evaluators, to say that these reprisal protections were working. And when we determined that they were not, they shut down the evaluation. That's what's in the Daily Beast article that was leaked. And ultimately, they came after Daniel P. Meyer and chased him out. But because of Charles McCullough and Daniel P. Meyer, the Department of Homeland Security did an investigation on the reprisals against Andrew Bakich, and they determined that, yes, reprisals were taken against him. But here's the really bad part about this all. Despite the fact that these reprisals were substantiated, Congress had the audacity to hire David Buckley to be the staff director of the J6 committee. And when there was a public outcry by the civil society that helps whistleblowers asking for David Buckley to be kicked out of that staff committee assignment, Congress had the audacity to say, no, David Buckley is a great man. He's been an honorable servant, served the government for 30 plus years. He's staying. So it goes back to the failure of Congress to have any accountability.
Well, you say in the title of your book, A Deep State Run Amok. I think there's a lot of people on the left who, when they hear the term deep state, just say, oh, that's MAGA Republicans running their mouth again about some conspiracy theory, tinfoil hat wearing. There's no deep state in the United States. You were in the belly of the beast. Is there a deep state that's actually running the United States government?
Well, when you have far left members of society like David Talbot, who wrote A Devil's Chessboard, that goes into the heart and the belly of the history of the deep state and calls out a deep state and proves beyond the reasonable doubt that the deep state murdered John F. Kennedy. If you fail to realize and say that there isn't a deep state, honestly, you're being ignorant of historical facts. And as an insider, what I witnessed was that, yes, you do have it's a confluence of civil servants and political appointees who make the executive branch of government to be so powerful that they can circumvent a president, defy a president, or refuse to even comply with Congress. When you have elements of this bureaucratic state within the national security establishment that defy presidents and Congress, you do have a deep state run amok that basically acts as if it's above the law, refuses to comply with the law, and will take certain actions that certainly are in violation of the U.S. Constitution.
You're here at an interesting time. We just got the new tranche of Twitter files, which were just released, which is all about the CIA. As journalist Michael Schellenberger has been going through these documents and the tranche of documents. And it shows, of course, at the heart of what the CIA is, right, is it's an organization that's supposed to protect us from foreign enemies. But when we learn from the Twitter files is that the CIA was actively working to undermine the United States, American populace, American citizens, silencing, blocking information, influencing the 2020 election. And does that sound, when you were hearing about the Twitter files, when you hear about these pieces of information coming out, does it sound like the organization you worked for?
There's a couple of factors in place here. The National Security Act of 1947 established CIA and elements of what became the intelligence community. You have an Executive Order 12333 that pretty much provides the guidelines as far as what they're supposed to do and not to do, further refined by what's known as Department of Justice Attorney General guidelines. There are Attorney General guidelines for the FBI, for the CIA, what they can and cannot do. But here's a problem. how this has fallen off the rails or gotten off the rails or gotten out run amok. When you have weaponized government power, what I mean by that is like the Patriot Act, counterterrorism authorities, counterintelligence authorities, you start crossing gray areas. Whereas the Attorney General guidelines, Executive Order 12333, is very black and white. If an American or any American organization gets linked in one way or another to a counterintelligence issue or counterterrorism issue, they can be flagged and designated for investigations or some kind of intelligence operation. And consequently, the CIA can get involved in those cases, but they do so working jointly with the FBI. And there are offices at the FBI and the CIA where you have both CIA and FBI. So what we have witnessed is they find loopholes and areas where they can get involved where technically they shouldn't be involved. Like, for example, Russia crossfire hurricane. All you've got to do is have somebody who will lie, like the Steele dossier, and it creates a predicate to conduct an investigation. And now you've got the full force and fury of the U.S. government going after someone or individuals or organizations under these authorities that are just weaponized government power.
You said something there about JFK just a moment ago. I want to kind of circle back on that. Is it, you know, of course, Tucker Carlson on his show before he was fired from Fox News, I think for the first time really exposed the fact that the CIA assassinated or was in part responsible for the assassination of John F. Kennedy, President Kennedy, and from those at the CIA that confirmed it. And upon the documents, the classified documents, which would show all of them to all of America, that is the case. Is it your assessment from your research working at the CIA that the CIA did in fact assassinate John F. Kennedy?
Yes, there's a couple of points to consider. The CIA leaders, when John F. Kennedy took over, were essentially the same leaders under Eisenhower and Nixon. And Kennedy didn't want to rock the boat because his victory was marginal, a very, very weak win for the presidency. So he kept one critical leader called Alan Welsh Dulles. But the Bay of Pigs, he got lied to. John F. Kennedy was lied to by his national security establishment. And that's where we get that infamous quote where he wants to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. So he literally went into a war internally with the deep state, the CIA, national security establishment. And in this war, he basically fired Alan Welsh Dulles. And he put in place John McCone as the director of CIA. Well, it turns out that John McCone was just a figurehead leader and didn't know everything that was going inside the CIA. Add to that the fact that Congress was failing to do oversight over the CIA. Congress was basically covering for the CIA by telling the CIA, don't tell us everything you're doing, just do what you're doing. And it turns out that Alan Welsh Dulles was still running the CIA. And he was engaged in nefarious activities with Italian mafia, Cuban mafia type characters and actors. And there are just too many fingerprints of Alan Welsh Dulles and some of these shady figures in a conspiratorial job to take out John F. Kennedy. And a book by the name of The Devil's Chessboard by David Talbot, the founder of Salon magazine, and actually a liberal, gets into a lot of these details. And he also wrote a follow-on book called Brothers, which talks about Robert F. Kennedy Sr.'s quest to get to the truth behind the JFK assassination. And everything points to the CIA having a role in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Not necessarily the established CIA elements, but the rogue elements of the CIA that failed to be under the leadership of John McCone and under congressional oversight. And that said, why would the CIA or the U.S. government not release all the documents? They want to hide something. If you're not releasing something, you're trying to hide something. They say sources and methods. Sources and methods? Methods of assassination, perhaps? Sources of who did the assassination? That mean that's the logical conclusion to make. So direct answer is yes. Historically, there's proof that the CIA had its fingers in a conspiracy to assassinate John F. Kennedy and to cover it up with Alan Welsh Dulles playing a prominent role in the Warren Commission that became basically like a rubber stamp act to cover the crime of, not the century of that time, but probably the crime of the entire history of the United States.
He was also, John F. Kennedy was also lied to about the USS Liberty. He was also lied to about Israel's nuclear program. It seems like there was a lot of lying from CIA to John F. Kennedy at the time. And they knew this, and they were pretty open about it. Is it common knowledge when you're like walking the halls of the CIA or you're having a quiet dinner with other agents and you're talking about this sort of stuff? Do you guys bring this up? Do you talk about this? Is this something that, in normal company you wouldn't, but because you're with other CIA agents, it's a wink and a nod, and it's a glass of wine, and we know that the CIA was involved in this assassination.
I mean, sadly, when you enter the CIA, just like any government employee, you enter in with noble reasons, in service to the country, national security, defense the country from all, foreign and domestic enemies. You're kind of oblivious of some of this history. And it never really comes up, except as through the years when you get more training, when you get more exposure. Then you start getting into some of the history of the organization that they don't teach you internally, because they don't teach you these things internally. Pretty much they obviously brainwash you that this organization is great, that it only does good for the American people. So not really. Only once you're outside of it and you start going into the history of it do you really find out the truth.
Right. And of course, when I was saying the USS Liberty, what I meant was the nuclear program ahead of the USS Liberty incident in 1967, many years, of course, after John F. Kennedy was assassinated. But talking about the nuclear program, he was lied flat out to by his intelligence apparatus. Even Eisenhower warned him that, in fact, they already have nuclear weapons. And his intelligence apparatus was basically teaming up with Mossad and saying, no, this is sort of an off-limits conversation here. It's unbelievable to think that the president is not on a need-to-know basis, right? The president seems like he's kept out of a lot of this information. Is that your experience when you were working under President Trump?
Well, my experience from what I witnessed inside of the CIA and the Office of Inspector General of the Intelligence Community, for that matter, the Office of Congressional Affairs at the CIA and many government agencies are supposed to manage Congress. I would rather rename it the Office of Covert Affairs, because they're trying to shape and influence what Congress believes and knows. Similarly, the Office of Public Affairs is supposed to manage the relations with the public press, and so forth. I would rename that the Office of Propaganda Affairs, because again, they're there to kind of shape and inform these elements as far as what they want them to see. I witnessed firsthand reading documents how they were basically lying to Congress. And what I mean by lying to Congress is just flat out not telling them the truth, kind of just spinning it up, kind of restating it in a rosy way so that it's like, okay, there's nothing wrong here.
Can you be specific? So Congress calls the head of the CIA, other higher-ups in front of Congress for sort of normal congressional committee hearings and things like that. They're questioning them about different things that are happening at the CIA. They're prepared to go before Congress, and they are knowingly choosing to withhold information from Congress and change. You're seeing the documents, and the CIA is purposely hiding or changing information to present to Congress and lying to them. What information?
I put one example in my book where there was a billion-dollar program that got absolutely butchered at the CIA. And the language that they gave Congress was, instead of telling Congress the truth that the leadership of the CIA messed up this program, They had the audacity to tell Congress we hired the wrong people for the job. I mean, basically, that's just about as ridiculous as it was. And I actually got to read the perspective from the people that were hired to do the job. And it was clear that it was just feckless management with just not having a clue what they were doing to mess this up. Then you have other things out there. I mean, the infamous testimony given by Clapper, where Senator Ron Wyden is asking him, does the NSA, does the intelligence community collect, you know, against Americans? And Clapper is scratching his head, no. Flat out lie. What I find most astonishing is that, particularly, by this time, Congress knew that the intelligence community was collecting against Americans. So I have no doubt that Ron Wyden was trying to get this on the public record. And I believe, honestly, that even Senator Ron Wyden was probably shocked this man would lie to him. Because it's no secret that the intelligence community is collecting everything like a vacuum cleaner, which is why you wanted to have these warrants for the FISA collection. And there are other examples out there. Anytime there's an intelligence failure, whatever Congress gets, I would be asking questions what they're not telling me, what I'm not getting. Because, I mean, there's another case out there by John Reedy where he was a whistleblower that used the internal process. And he used the procedures like I did. And in his case, you know, it went to the inspector general, it went to his supervisors, and there were some serious problems with some kind of technical program. And the agency didn't do anything to fix it. They basically just covered it up. Hmm. Meanwhile, they stripped John Reedy of his job and his clearance. When he's trying to get the IG to investigate, the IG does not want to investigate. Ultimately, he ends up going to the Office of Inspector General. The Office of Inspector General, it basically punts back to CIA. The CIA is saying, no, we don't have to investigate. John Reedy is not getting any protection. Then he goes to Congress. And Congress tells the CIA, you have to investigate this case of reprisal against John Reedy. The CIA told Congress, no, we're not going to investigate. Ultimately, Reedy ends up going back to the Office of Inspector General. And by this time, thankfully, the leadership there, Charles McCullough, Daniel P. Meyer, forced the CIA IG to investigate. Well, the CIA IG investigates, but does a shoddy sham investigation. So when the ICIG read the report, they send it back to the CIA IG and tell them, you have to further investigate. This is incomplete. And to this date, there is no known knowledge that the CIAG ever correctly investigated this case. And he is still engaged in FOIA litigation to try to get reports that date almost 10 years. Wow. And ultimately, the truth has come out in the press that apparently this involved a technical program that reportedly, according to press reports, where perhaps dozens of assets were killed and rounded up. A serious intelligence failure that could have been averted had they listened to a whistleblower instead of taking reprisals against him.
When you say assets, you mean human beings that were killed?
Yes, human beings. That is correct.
I want to wind the clock back a little bit here, Pedro, for our audience, just to give them some perspective on your history with the CIA. And your family fled communist Cuba, the tyranny of that government, to come to the United States. And I think back in the day, I think you probably saw the CIA. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I know you were sort of in the business world in Miami and trying to work your way up and working hard. And the CIA recruiters, you were at a session. You managed to meet with them and then go through that process. What was your sense what year was that when you first met with a CIA recruiter and thought maybe this would be a career path for you? What year was that?
That was 1999. My final year of my upper undergraduate education, at about the 14th year of working in business post high school graduation.
This was pre 9/11. This was pre Patriot Act. This was, you know, I think I remember my college years at the University of Pittsburgh. I was, you know, I would watch the X-Files and think maybe. maybe I would join the FBI. You know, maybe this was a career path for me. This would be a great way to be a patriot, you know, support, go after bad guys, help America. When you first started working at the CIA, is that how you saw it, or did you see it differently?
I mean, I'm a product of the Cold War of the 80s. Those were my teenage years. And growing up in Miami, you know, from a family that fled Cuba, I witnessed firsthand the perils of communism with the family separation. I had a grandmother who, when her mother passed away, you know, it had been 14 plus years since she hadn't seen her mother, and yet here she was and couldn't go to the funeral. My father had cousins he never saw again, or it took him 20 years to see them. I had a granduncle who was in prison as a political prisoner in Cuba. And growing up in this kind of a household, seeing firsthand the effects of tyranny, how it destroys families, and then being a product of the Cold War of the 80s, foreign relations, foreign affairs, intelligence operations, defense-related affairs were of significant interest to me. So, I mean, I went in with high hopes, you know, optimistic that I can go in, serve this nation and, you know, defend us from foreign and domestic enemies. And, you know, then you have 9/11. Now you've got a serious, you know, issue here where you've got a global war on terror. So I was very gung-ho serving, you know, in every capacity I can to defend and protect this nation. But ultimately what I found out, the further I basically implanted myself in the CIA, that ultimately it's not about national security, it's about the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy comes first. Like Admiral Rickover once stated, if you're ever going to sin, sin against God, he'll forgive. But don't ever sin against the bureaucracy, because they'll never forgive.
So it's like a giant octopus that's just consuming, just growing and growing and growing, like a nebula, I suppose, in space. I sort of see it that way. It'll never shrink. It just keeps getting larger and larger and larger. And if those sort of speak out against, the virus comes in, they're going to eat, it's going to eat its own. They're going to eat its own, and they're going to continue to grow. It's going to continue to run amok, as you say.
They promote their own kind. In order to move up the ranks, you're going to have to be like one of them as far as in the higher leadership. Typically what happens is you go in with all these noble aspirations and you reach a critical point in your career where you make a decision. Okay, am I going to put the bureaucracy first or continue putting U.S. national security and the Constitution first? If you choose the latter, you are going to have to do one of two things, or potentially three things. One is quit. Get out. A lot of people actually do that. A lot of people go in and work, you know, 4 or 5, you know, 7 years, maybe 10, and just get out. If you want to remain in there and still have integrity, you're going to have to either compromise your integrity to be one of them or choose your battles wisely. You can't fight every war and win every battle. So you choose your battles wisely and you look out who you work for. Unfortunately, in some cases, what happens is you may be put in a situation where you have no choice but to confront some sort of evil. And in that process, you know, you get a big X on your back, and now you are public enemy number one inside the agency. And the whole system will come after you to basically beat you into submission or beat you until you quit. And given my background, where I came from, how I grew up, I was not one to be bullied into submission or, for that matter, to quit. So I refused to quit or to be beat until silenced, and I continued to fight to declare the truth. As high up as Pompeo, Senator Daniel Coats, who became the Director of National Intelligence, and even Congress. But back to your main point of your question, the system will either swallow you and you become one of them, or you find a way out. If not, you're going to just basically what we call retire in place, where you basically just become another number. You are a number ultimately, and you keep your mouth shut and you do your time until you can retire.
And you were fired about, what, 1 year right before your pension? So, and they knew that. They knew exactly what they were doing, right? They held it for that long. Yeah.
My last appeal clearly told them, look, I'm 1 year shy of retirement. You know, at this stage, even put me on leave without pay for a year. You know, they could have actually put me on leave without pay for a year. And that the way it works, if it's a certain time frame, that year actually counts for service. So I could have literally have remained a year on leave without pay and have gotten out with my hard-earned first special, but they even refused to do that.
What is the duty of the CIA?
I mean, ultimately, the duty is to defend and protect the United States from foreign and domestic enemies, but more so to foreign service, to collect intelligence, process intelligence, so that our national security leaders, the president, his cabinet, and senior executive leaders in the government have the intelligence necessary to make foreign policy and war-related decisions. Ultimately, in a nutshell, that's it.
So it seems like then, based on that, the CIA has forsaken its duty. And when I hear stories about the CIA being involved in the coup in Ukraine in 2014 and installing a puppet government, I mean, how is that part of its duty? I mean, it seems to me that that has run afoul of its charter.
Well, look at the budget. We have a defense budget of 800 and something billion dollars. We have an intelligence budget of close to $70 billion. The total defense and intelligence budget is in excess of $900 billion a year. On that note, that's a vast amount of money. So much so that only 20 countries in the world have a yearly gross domestic product larger than the U.S. defense and intelligence budget. So when you have so much money, and you have so much money to spend, how are you going to spend it? What are you going to do? You end up basically what we call mission creep, where you've got just busy activity just to justify your existence. Undoubtedly, there are a lot of elements of the U.S. government that have way too much money and have way too much activity that could potentially be shut down or tailored back. And that's where we are at in the intelligence community and the defense community.
The president of the United States, of course, is ultimately in charge of the executive branch. The president of the United States is in charge of the CIA constitutionally, you would think, the FBI, the 18 intelligence agencies that we have in the United States. Is President Biden running the country? Is President Biden running the United States of America?
No, neither was President Trump. It's the truth, or for that matter, you might as well George W. Bush, or even for that matter, maybe Barack Obama. I mean, the executive branch of government has grown so powerful that they almost dictate to presidents what to do. Here's one blatant example. National Security Council, decision-making for national security-related matters like Ukraine, the Balkans, Iraq. You have career civil servants working in the National Security Council. It is these career civil servants, CIA, NSA, FBI, other IC element personnel, that are pretty much drawing up plans, policies for the political appointees. There are cases where you have a political appointee who is very powerful and has sufficient gravitas to dictate to the bureaucracy what to do, what not to do, like DCIA Brennan. But a lot of times, these bureaucrats will say, okay, we got a policy to make here regarding Ukraine. We know the president is not going to like policy A, policy B, so let's write up what we want him to do. That'll be policy C. So they go in and they brief a president with policy A. The president says, no, that's not what I want. Policy B, no, that's not what I want. Policy C, okay, yeah, that sounds reasonable. I'll do that. So now you've got the bureaucracy telling the president what to do. We find that happens too frequently. Duh. And for that matter, a lot of times you will find presidents trying to shake up their bureaucracy with, you know, kind of the constant influx of people going in and out because he's having to deal with these issues. And he's trying to find the right people that can actually have enough power to tell these bureaucrats what to do. That's why you had such a constant shuffle with President Trump. And ultimately, the bottom line is that no president is completely in control of his government. And that's because that is just how powerful the executive branch has become through the years.
When you have tens of thousands of employees in the executive branch, how can any one person really be in charge of it? This, to me, is a hydra that has just exploded right now. How are you doing now? Now, how far removed from the CIA are you at this point? I mean, how many years removed are you, and what has life been like for you now, post where what should have been your retirement? What do you have to deal with on a daily basis? What has it been like for you now that you're outside of the belly of the beast?
I mean, it took me a couple years to kind of shake off the ill effects of, what I suffered physically from the rigors of working in war zones, the, body contaminated, several health issues, the similarly just the toxicity of the bureaucratic bullying, the, getting free from all that took quite a bit of time. The biggest issue I have had is the damage this has caused to my daughter. I have a daughter who was born in a foreign country. Getting her here was a long process because of issues with the job back during that time frame in the early 2010s. Ultimately, when we finally are settled in, and doing well in the Northern Virginia area, I run into this incident of whistleblower reprisals that basically wrecked my finances, having to spend tens of thousands of dollars on a lawyer, not getting any jobs, basically being chased out of CIA. Caused hardships on my marriage that basically led my ex-wife to move back to her native country with my daughter. So this has separated my daughter and I. And I'm having to deal, seeing my daughter a couple times a year, maybe once or twice or three times. And a lot of times, every time that I see her, having to basically hold her and have her cry, and, having her, call me on FaceTime, WhatsApp, Skype, whatever it is, crying because she misses me. So it's caused a lot of hardships on my relationship with my daughter. As far as career, my national security career pretty much destroyed, unless, a new presidential administration comes in and offers me an appointment of some sort. That could be a potential way to rehabilitate me. As far as the CIA, if they never really investigated my reprisals correctly, there's serious deficiencies in the first reprisal investigation, and they never investigated the second wave of reprisals and never have had an interest. If they would ever go back and do that, which I have no confidence they could, potentially they could substantiate the reprisals and I potentially could basically be reinstated and get my time back so they can retire me. I mean, that's a possibility, but that's going to take basically an act of somebody being willing to step up to the plate and do what is right. So here I am, going on fired. I consider my official date of termination to be January 21 of 2019, when is they notified a new attorney that my final appeal was denied and I was fired. And like I said, that's 1 year shy of retirement. Post that time, I basically just left the Washington, D.C. area, relocated to Tulsa, Oklahoma, because it's a much easier place to live. Decided to go to a Bible college and write a book. Writing the book took a lot of my time, and currently basically working on, promoting the book and also working on a documentary about the perils of, the abuse of government power, a documentary by the name of Deep State Gangsters, which is going to feature John Kiriakou, Nate Kane, Lee Smith, J. Michael Waller, and another FBI whistleblower. And we hope to feature that film out sometime in early fall, maybe September.
Just awful. Just awful to hear what our government has done to you for trying to do the right thing. And that's the most troubling part of this. And hearing you're not alone in this, as you know. I mean, we've had multiple FBI whistleblowers on our show who've also had their lives ruined, government going after them, whether it's Kyle Serafin or Garrett O'Boyle. Those stories, of course, are really horrifying. And it seems like they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing on how to try to ruin your life. You talked about you had to self-publish the book because I guess no publishers would take it. The CIA calls up Simon and Schuster and says, "Don't take this book. Do not take this book." So you had to self-publish the book, right?
I have no doubt there's an element of that going on because I have faced censorship from Google, YouTube, Twitter. Thankfully, now with Elon Musk, X has become better. But I mean, I've had just to fight a battle with censorship. I mean, I had one company that specializes in book publicity, and I wanted to buy the press release and the book sell sheet. They took the intake form. We had some dialogue going back and forth. They got back to me, sorry, you know, not a reflection of your book, but we don't work these kind of books. Similarly, you know, publicist, I ran into the same issue. So I opted to do the self-publishing route, which is very difficult because how do you get the book out there? The publishing industry has its significant challenges as well. You don't publish a book to make money. And the only one that, the only people that really make money with publishing a book is like if it's someone famous who gets basically a large sum of money up front.
Right, right. No, it just kind of pays the bills a little bit, you know, if you can. And I hope our audience here. So let's put the book cover up here on the screen. And what's amazing is our redacted audience. We've had a number of censored books. We've had a number of authors who've been on and Amazon has like blacklisted them, you know, hidden them. Google has censored them. They can't get publication. They can't get featured. They can't get their book to even show up. And when you even search for it in Amazon results, it's difficult to even find it. And our redacted audience is amazing. And they've taken those books, you know, to number one on the Amazon charts. So everyone watching right now, I don't ask you to do this often, but please go to Amazon, look up the book, The Broken Whistle, buy it, download it, get on a Kindle, buy a copy of it, a hardback copy, read it, and then, you know, share it with your public library, donate a copy to the library, do any of that. And support an American patriot who is trying to do the right thing and trying to get this institution fixed. I guess I'll ask you this, Pedro, do you think the CIA is fixable? And I know you seem like an optimistic person like I am. Do you think it's fixable or it needs to be totally destroyed?
It's a tough question. I mean, there are things the CIA does well, undoubtedly. But then when you look at the history of how many times they have failed, then you really begin to question it. And then the toxic nature of a bureaucracy. I mean, there are times in history where you have no choice but to completely gut an organization and start from scratch. That's what we did in Iraq with the Iraq Intelligence Service and the military. You have no choice but to do that. They did that in the country of South America, Colombia, where their intelligence, domestic intelligence agency, the equivalent of the FBI, was caught spying on political opponents. They completely gutted and shut down that organization, put people in prison as well, and restarted a new one. We are at a time in our history where we may have no choice but to seriously consider gutting some of these organizations and rebuilding them from either from scratch or peeling off certain elements. I mean, there is no question, for example, that there is a role for the intelligence analysis branch of the CIA. But on that note, there's a lot of redundancy in the intelligence community. You have a dozen other agencies doing intelligence analysis. I remember when one principal was briefed. This principal received a briefing, received XYZ information, and he said, "Stop! I don't want to hear this anymore. I just had somebody else brief me on this issue, and they were saying something different. You two need to get together and find out what the blank is going on and come tell me the truth." So that's an actual true story. So hard questions need to be asked. It may be time for another church commission, but I would not just rely on politicians. I would bring in outsiders like Jonathan Turley, Alan Dershowitz, Elon Musk, you know, other people who have been successful in other endeavors to do basically a deep dive and find out, is it salvageable? And if it is, how can we salvage it? Or do we recommend doing something new?
I just worry, you know, you want to tear down the organization and it's like the Third Reich. It pops up in Argentina. You know, everyone thinks Hitler's dead. He's not. He's in Argentina living out his days for the last, you know, into the 1960s, and everyone thinks he's dead. And it's like it's a hydra that just moves, you know. And so you think you've killed the deep state. That's what I worry about. The book is called The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok, a memoir of a CIA whistleblower. My guest has been Pedro Israel Horta. And just want to say thanks so much for your time and so sorry to hear about how difficult this has been for you and your family. Hopefully there's a future administration that will point you in high regard and have you go in and maybe help clean house. I hope maybe a future Trump administration or RFK Jr. administration would be open with eyes to hearing all of that. Pedro, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Clayton. It's been a pleasure. God bless you.